Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, the Czech crown jewels go on display. Who were they made for, and what are some of the legends attached to them? And successful TV writer Tomáš Baldiňský takes us to some of his favourite spots in my Prague. But first, thousands of people braved the cold this week, waiting for hours in the rain and snow for a rare chance to see the Bohemian crown jewels, which went on display at Prague Castle on the occasion of the centenary of the birth of Czechoslovakia in 1918. Who were the coronation jewels made for, and what are some of the legends attached to them? In this special programme, we'll hear from the jeweller whose family has been in charge of their maintenance for many years. Daniela Lazareva has more.
St. Vitus Cathedral at Prague Castle, the seat of Czech kings, holds a priceless treasure, the Bohemian crown jewels, which were used in the coronations of the country's monarchs. The crown jewels are deposited in a safe in a special chamber, which is secured with seven locks, to which the country's top officials have keys. The seven holders of the keys who need to assemble in order to open the door to the royal treasure are the President, the Prime Minister, the Prague Archbishop, the Speakers of the Lower and Upper Chambers of Parliament, the Dean of the Metropolitan Chapter of St. Vitus Cathedral, and the Mayor of Prague. This ceremony is carefully observed and traditionally broadcast live on public television on the rare occasions when the Bohemian crown jewels go on display. In the course of the 20th century, they were only shown on 9 occasions. The crown jewels are not all from the same period. They include the crown of St. Wenceslas, the royal orb and scepter, the coronation vestments of the kings of Bohemia, a gold reliquary cross, and the St. Wenceslas sword. The crown was made for the coronation of Charles IV in 1347, making it the fourth oldest crown in Europe. The royal orb and scepter that are part of the collection date back to the 16th century. They were reportedly commissioned by Ferdinand I in 1533. It is believed that the originals, which lacked any precious stones, were considered too austere to adequately reflect the prestige of the Kingdom of Bohemia, so they were replaced by artifacts made in an ornate jeweled style that resembled the crown. The first mention of the sword in historical records dates back to 1333. The blade, though, dates back to the 10th century, while the hilt is from the 13th century. The sword was not only used in coronation ceremonies, but also for the purpose of granting knighthoods. After 1918 and the birth of the Czechoslovak Republic, the crown jewels ceased to serve their original function, but they remain important symbols of national independence and statehood. The Belder jewelers have been in charge of their maintenance for years. As a child, Jiří Belder Jr. watched his father make the first copy of the crown for Expo 1967 in Montreal. Today he is in charge of the crown jewels maintenance, ably assisted by his daughter, also a successful jeweler. He told Czech Radio what the work involves.
Já se k ním dostávám před jejich vystavením a pak před jejich uložením zase zpátky do korunovačního.
I'm called upon to provide maintenance whenever the royal jewels go on display and then once again before they go back into storage. I examine them to make sure that all the prong settings are in order and none of the precious stones have come loose. Over the years, I know the crown inside out, so I know what to look for. The royal jewels are rarely handled, so there's not much to be done. And my job before they go on display is to clean and polish them to perfection.
The royal crown is named after the Duke of St. Wenceslas of the Přemysl dynasty of Bohemia. It has an unusual design with vertical fleur-de-lis at the front, back and sides. Made from 22 carat gold, it is decorated with 96 precious stones and 20 pearls, among them sapphires, emeralds, spinels, a ruby and an aquamarine. Not all the gems are perfect. Some have slight imperfections that make them unique, and the ruby is visibly chipped. Yeti Belda says no one knows how this came to be.
Tak je to prostě, co já pamatuju, nejsem historik, takže teď...
The ruby has had this defect for as long as I remember. I have no idea how the chip on it comes to be there, but it is part of the authentic crown, so there is no question of trying to fix it. Although during the reign of Charles IV, some of the precious stones were replaced when the king acquired bigger and better ones.
Karol IV. Vyměňoval některé kameny, když získal větší, lepší, hezčí.
The crown weighs 2.4 kilos. At the top is a cross, which reportedly used to store a thorn from Christ's crown of thorns. No one knows where that has gone. This year, the crown is exhibited in a new glass case, which will allow visitors to admire it from all sides. Some of the gems, such as the big blue sapphire that is one of the dominant stones at the back of the crown, had never been seen before by the public. Yeti Belda explains how the precious stones were mounted.
Jednak ty kameny nejsou broušený klasickou metodou jako facetově.
The precious stones in the royal crown were not cut or faceted in the usual manner in order to increase their brilliance and maximize the play of light and fire within them. A few have a simple facet, but most of the stones were simply polished in order to maintain their full size. Many were not originally intended for the crown. They come from necklaces or private collections. And the jeweler who mounted them left them in their original state in order to highlight their size, beauty, and color. Each stone is mounted in a perfect cup of its own. It is not directly attached to the fleur-de-lis, but stands out 1 or 2 centimeters. The stones are mounted in a simple manner and held in place by a few prongs, which means that one can see the whole stone in all its beauty.
Takže ten kámen je vidět v podstatě skoro celý, že jo?
An ancient Czech legend says that any usurper who would dare to place the crown of St. Wenceslas on his head would die within a year. This legend was further fueled by a rumor that during World War II, Nazi governor Reinhard Heydrich secretly tried on the crown. He was assassinated less than a year later by the Czech resistance. Yeti Belda says he does not believe the tale.
To není jenom můj názor, to je i názor různých historiků, že to...
It's not just my own opinion. Most historians would agree that this is just a legend. It reflects the feeling that the crown is something sacred, something beyond the reach of normal human beings. So I do not believe that even Heydrich would have placed it on his head. And it is something you experience very strongly when you are standing in front of the crown. You get a very powerful sense of how special this artifact is, as if the people and events of past centuries spoke out to you.
Promlouvá a dýchá, nebo jak bych to nazval.
When Belda Jr. was a small boy, he watched his father make the first copy of the crown jewels for Expo 1967 in Montreal. He himself has now made 2 more copies of the crown on commission.
Je to také ze stříbra a pozlacené.
The copies of the royal crown are all made of gold-plated silver. The stones are glass. You could not have it otherwise because it would be impossible to find precious stones identical to the ones you have in the crown of St. Wenceslas. And also the fact that they are glass allows you to create the same imperfections that you have on the original stones.
Despite feeling a sense of pride in his work, Yeti Belda says he hopes not to make any more copies, since too many of them would devalue the original crown.
To, co se děje v posledních 10 letech, je trochu dehonestace.
I don't approve of the need for more and more copies of the crown to be made, as we have seen in recent years. In a way, I think it devalues the crown as a national symbol. I think there should be a law restricting the number of copies made, because as far as I know, there are at least 10 of them now. I know it's good business, but when you consider the significance of national symbols such as this, I think it is sad.
Tu věc samou mi to přijde smutný, no.
Jiří Belda, the jeweler whose family has been in charge of the maintenance of the crown jewels for years now. And the crown jewels will remain on display at Prague Castle until January 23rd.
That report was by my colleague Daniela Lazarova. Now, Tomáš Baldínský is a highly successful TV producer, and he's my guide in this edition of My Prague. Tomáš Baldínský is a well-known TV writer and producer whose most recent work was the hit comedy Cosmo. He's also worked over the years as a newspaper columnist and film critic, among various other activities. Our tour of Tomáš Baldínský's Prague begins in the city's Letná district at Club 777. It's a dingy open all-hours bar with slot machines in the back.
It's my favorite spot in Letná. I live here now, and I don't know if your listeners know that, but Letná is full of this like modern cafes, and they treat you with flat whites and fair trade soya chinos, stuff like that. And this is the direct opposite. This is like 24 hours opened, a spot with slot machines and roulette. And they have beer and they have coffee. You can smoke here. And people tend to finish their binge drinking here. So when I come here in the morning, because I do come here to work, to write, I usually come here at like 8:30, 9 a.m. and I meet some people who were drinking all the night here. They're finishing the drinks, and I sort of like it, because of when I watch them, I feel that I'm a rebel, as rebel as them. So that's what I like it. And they have very eclectic jukebox here, because of you can hear here everything from racist heavy metal bands to intellectual chanson singers.
Frankly, it's a pretty strange place to come to work, it seems to me.
It is, but you know what? Just today I was demoted in Czech TV, and they took away my office because of I didn't go there that often. So they told me, okay, so we will change you to home office now. But I can't work at home. And when I was smoking, this was the only place I could go and write and smoke. The other thing is, I don't know if you have it, but if you go to this like intellectual coffees, you see basically that everyone is like you, because everyone is sitting there with their laptops and writing. And I hate that. So I come here and there is nobody like me. Homeless guys are coming here, and skinheads are coming here. So it's, you can just like observe people and write about them, so which is much easier than in the other cafes.
And as a writer, do you find yourself listening into people's conversations here?
Yeah, of course. It's great. But, you know, you can't use it. It's just like for you the distraction. Because you say, okay, I am the writer, so I will listen to them and then I will write it. You don't write it because of it's of no use, but it's usually very funny.
And who are the clientele here? On my way here, I met an old friend of mine, and he said that he used to come here sometimes, and he thought it was a place where sometimes off-duty police came, and also criminals.
Yeah, I believe that this is the spot where everyone comes. I see the drug dealers here, and I see, for example, my partner who is the novelist, and she comes here as well. So I believe this is like most eclectic place in Prague.
You're saying you live here at Letná. Letná is maybe the most hipsterish part of Prague now. How do you feel about that development?
I just sort of hate it, because if I say what every hipster says, that I was here first, I liked it here before all of the others. But it's sort of difficult to live here now, because of it's getting more and more expensive. And people who live here tend to make me furious when I see them running around on their electric scooters with IMAX in the designer bags. So I'm sort of thinking to moving somewhere else. But there is Stromovka Park, which is the most are one of the most beautiful places in Prague, so you just can't lose it.
From Letná, Tomáš Baldinský and I hop on a tram down to Malá Strana. There, just a few metres from Charles Bridge on Mostecká Street, is a building that his family have had a close association with for generations and was Baldinský's own home in the past. He leads the way up to a small terrace with a wonderful view across the district's distinctive red-tiled rooftops.
This is really a beautiful spot, and I haven't been here 2 or 3 years, so I just wanted to come by and to give me the reason.
In what period did you live here? What were the years?
It was like 90s. It was roaring 90s, which is, as I always say, were the best years to party in the century, I believe.
Did you feel privileged living here?
No, I haven't, because of it was all too normal for me, because of, you know, even though the house was confiscated by communists, my grandmother and grandfather lived here on the second floor. On the first floor, it was my grand-auntie and great-uncle. So it was just sort of like family house to me, and when it was returned to the family, it just continued. But still, yes, people were envious about me. And, for example, I have screened the movies on the wall of the opposite building. As you can see, that window wasn't there because they built it later. And so we had this like digital projector here in the end of 90s. It was worth like 300,000 crowns or something like that. And we were screening the films. I recall the screening of film Picasso's Aventure, which is a Swedish comedy, and people were laughing that much that best friend of mine almost fell down over the rail to this beautiful Malostranská roof, which is under us.
And what was it like here on this street, on Mostecká, for example, in the 80s when you used to come to visit your grandmother?
Malá Strana was just saved because of, you don't know that, but the Communist Party wanted to destroy it and build some new panel buildings here. And it was one of the biggest uprisings against their will was that we were like, I was like 12, but a lot of people were like creating demonstrations here, so they didn't do it. But in that time, now the Malá Strana is sort of sometimes very beautiful, sometimes it's very like ugly, touristy, cheap thrills, cheap things. In those times it was like really romantically fading away and falling apart. The street was full of scaffolding and the bricks were falling from the walls. But it was sort of, well, I was a child, so I just recalled it with a lot of nostalgia. And I believe in those times it was better off because of there was full of people who were actually living here. And not like this, that they are all just hotels, Airbnbs and offices. There was the cinema, which was closed down. There wasn't McDonald's, but it was milk bars. You know, yes, I liked it better then.
So it was really a neighborhood still in those days?
Yeah, it was famous for its like closed, tight community which was living here and which was like very slowly falling apart in the 90s. We had this family friend, which she was the countess. She was like 8 years old and she lived in Tomáška Street. And then when they decided to enlarge the parliament building, so all those people who were living in that stream were moved out. And she had to move to some like panel building and the side of Prague. And this panel building had very low ceilings. So, and she was living here in this her flat at like 4 meters high ceiling. So she had to have her furniture cut in half so she could at least some of the pieces, this like old sign, like 100, 200 years old furniture cut in half to put it in that flat. And she died there like 1 year after she was moved there. She couldn't cope that she wasn't living here. So it was like really, it was really strong, this like feeling of mutuality. And I still, even though I don't live here and I just like pass some buildings and I still see some of the remaining neighbors, and there is this butcher shop in Karmelitska Street, which my grandmother was working there, and her co-worker now owns it, and she still runs it. So something left.
What do you know about the history of this building here?
Yeah, I know it was built in the... Well, there was the other building which was torn down, and this was built in the beginning of the 20th century. And I have this... We have this great family story about... Because of my family was partly Czech and partly German. And my great-great-father was Czech, and my great-great-mother was German. And they had this deal that they will raise the kids halfway, that guys will be raised Czech and the daughters will be raised German. And the great-great-mother was, she was a Nazi. She really loved Great Germany. And great-grandfather was like really Czech nationalist. So they had this like really difficult marriage. And when Adolf Hitler came in Prague after it was occupied by German forces, he was like going in the open car on so-called Royal Road, which starts at Old Town Square and goes up to the castle. So he had to pass our house. And when he was very near, great-great-mother opened the chest and she had the hidden Nazi flag there. She like shoved it out the building so Hitler would see that there is like Nazi living in the heart of Prague. I mean, my great-grandfather saw it and he like shoved it back. And she shoved it out, and he shoved it back, and so Hitler was going down the building, and there was this like Nazi flag. It was going in and out, and then great father knocked the great grandmother down, and he dislodged her jaw, as family says. So this is our famous part of history story.
The final stop on our journey through Tomáš Baldínský's Prague is the downtown boulevard Národní. Today, perhaps most famous as the spot where the Velvet Revolution kicked off in November 1989. When we arrive, I'm unaware of why our guide has selected this location.
Two reasons. The first is that we're standing in front of the building, which is very, very important for Czech cinema. It's Národní 28, where it used to be the place from which the Czech distribution was run during the time of communism. So it was the building where it was decided that Raiders of the Lost Ark will be distributed in Czech cinemas, which was why I'm doing films now. And more or less, this building is important for my career because of this building is where I became one, what I am now, which is a writer, producer of the TV series, because of I had the office here, which was meant to be my producer's office, and I was supposed to read the script of others and tell them if they're good or not, and I became that frustrated that I didn't like them, so I started to write them myself, which is what I'm doing now ever since. So it was I had the office here. And the second reason is that we are standing on the Národní třída, which is for my generation a very important place. And I must say, I'm not really nostalgic or just like, I'm not really a history conscious person. But when each time I go on Národní třída, I just like think that if it wouldn't happen, my life would be terrible. And now I must say, my life is quite okay. So this is my second reason.
And for listeners who don't know, which I'm sure there are very few of them, this is where the revolution began in 1989. What were you doing at that time?
I was here. I wasn't beaten, and I am not the hero, but I was present, and I was the member. And it was beautiful evening until the cops showed up. Yeah, then I was here.
Well, tell us more about it. I mean, for example, how close were you to the police?
I was at the beginning of the street, and we are now on the second end. So and beating started like in the half of the street. So I wasn't that close. Well, I almost said feasals. Cops were everywhere, but the cops who beat people weren't in proximity of me. So we just ran away because of that's what you did at the time.
Did you have any sense on that day, on the 17th of November, 89, that this would have great consequence?
Really, yeah. It wasn't just that day, but we had this feeling which started in the winter of that year that it has to collapse. And then you had this all those Eastern Germans emigrating, leaving their Trabants here, and you had August demonstrations, and you have 28th of October demonstrations. So it was just, we knew that it will be near, and we were just discussing with the friends there, and I said it couldn't be this, because it would be too symbolic, that it would be 17th of November, which is this incredibly important date from the beginning of the World War II. In 39, so I said it can't be 50 years after that directly, because it would look stupid in the history books, and it happened.
My final question, Tomáš, it's a big question. How do you view the way Prague has developed since that time as a city?
Well, it's great. It's great because of just, it's a living city. It's modern. They're not people like killing each other much. It's not destroyed that much, even though there's a lot of new buildings I hate really even to think about. But it's sort of, and it has like these generations are changing, and parts of Prague are in fashion and out of fashion, and it lives, and it's beautiful, and I wouldn't live anywhere else. Maybe Canada.
Tomáš Baldinský, who was my guide in My Prague in March of last year. And you'll find many more editions of that show on our website. And that brings us to the end of today's programme. If you have any comments about the show, do please get in touch. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz. And you'll also find us, of course, on Facebook and on Twitter. But that's all for now, folks. From me, Ian Willoughby, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much indeed for listening. And enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thank you.
Thank you.